Welcome to this week's edition of the Casual Shooters Podcast, your premier podcast for the casual shooter. This week's guest comes by way of the Midwest and an Instagram post. That's how I found out about this gentleman here. Now, we all know that Scott Arnberg was removed as the Area 3 director, and Luke Faust, I knew, had thrown his hat into the ring. What I didn't know was someone else had thrown their hat into the ring as well. That is my guest tonight. The gentleman who is more than likely going to be your next Area 3 director, unless something changes and Scott comes back on the board tonight. Yes, this is being recorded February 28th, because he will be uncontested. So if you would, join me in welcoming to the show, Mr. Andy Erickson. How you doing, Andy?
Dave, it was nice and tight. I like it. It wasn't like and sound effects go. Like, it was right on there. Well done.
Non-scripted either.
Good. That's good. Like, that's the thing a lot of people are not good at. Like, I'm still trying to find a murder podcast that doesn't sound like a girl reading a piece of paper and every sentence ends like a question. So being able to talk on the fly is definitely a skill to learn, for sure.
Well, having been a paramedic for 24 years, you've got to have, I've learned a few conversational skills throughout the years. Okay. So Andy, what I like to do is start with some icebreakers right up front. They're going to be the hardest questions of the entire show.
Okay.
Number one, favorite movie.
The Shawshank Redemption. It's not even close. Ooh. The greatest movie ever made. It's just not even close. It's a movie made from a book that's really short, and it's almost everything in the book is in the movie. There's some like extra graphic stuff that was removed that didn't make the movie, you know, the, you know, prison rape stuff. But I mean, it was there. It just wasn't graphic. It's one of the greatest movies ever made. And there's a reason it's number one on IMDb's top 200. But I have like I actually listened to your last episode, so I kind of knew this question was coming.
Ooh,
I have a cheater. I have like a 1A, like the most fun movie anyone can watch is Back to the Future.
But the original,
like the original, all three of them are great.
Okay,
but the original is just like the most fun movie. They're great. My kids loved them.
It's funny because not last night, but the night before, on YouTube, I watched the whole Johnny B. Good, Michael J. Fox scene.
Mm-hmm. No, love those movies scene. They're so good. The first one is really good, but the third, I mean, they're all good. Like, they're just fun. They're just great movies. And a good friend of mine, he's not that much younger than me, but he'd never seen any of them. And I gave him my DVD trilogy that I had and said, here, go watch this. That was like a year ago. I still haven't got it back. He still hasn't watched it. So there you go.
Oh, that's not much of a friend.
No. He'll learn someday.
Okay. So you know question number two then.
I don't remember it though.
Favorite book.
The movie one was the only one I remember. Favorite book.
Okay.
I did remember this. Okay. And I did remember the answer I was going to say. And that is With the Old Breed by Eugene Sledge.
Oh, okay.
It is. I got it because it was one of the books based on the Pacific miniseries, or that the miniseries was based on. And I read that and just could not stop reading it. It was so raw and real and not fluffy. Like, if you've ever read Band of Brothers, by comparison, it's fluffy. It's, you know, it's like pop history. And With the Old Breed is just like it was him in, you know, talking about everything that he went through. I've since listened to the audiobook a bunch of times. And I think the guy's name is Joe Mazzello that played him in the miniseries. He does the audiobook reading, and in that voice, it's really, really good. No, far and away, that's my favorite book. I have a 1A for that one though, too. The book MASH. A lot of people don't know. It was a book first.
I didn't know it was a book.
It was a book written by Richard Hooker, and then it was a movie and yep. in 1970. And the movie, yep. I will fight anyone who says the TV show is better than the movie. The movie's so much better than the TV show, but the book is better than both. It's so good. It's just, it's hilarious. It's one of the funniest books ever read, but it's also one no one, a lot of people don't know about. So that's kind of why I wanted to mention that one too. So I'm cheating. Yeah, I had two. Now I really have no idea what the next question is, though.
Well, I want to go back for a second because I downloaded that the book with the old breed and Helmet for My Pillow. Uh-huh. I just haven't gotten around to reading them yet. So
the Helmet for My Pillow is also very good, but he was a writer, and it's written he like was. A writer. So
okay,
that's kind of the difference. Like the fact that he doesn't know. Like he wasn't an incapable writer, you know, he was a college professor. He's not uneducated or anything, but he didn't do it like it was art. You know, it's just raw and plain. And like some of the criticism of that book is that, but to me, it's like its strongest thing is the fact that he wasn't a writer, you know, the way a lot of.
Yeah. I mean, he's just writing from the heart. You
yeah,
know,
and he's just and that's writing it. What he experienced. And
exactly.
Well, and Paul Fussell is a guy who was also served in World War II and has written many books. He is a writer and he does the foreword for that book. And he just it gives it the most glowing foreword you could imagine, because it is just it's one of those rare books that's just so like a regular writer, a professional writer couldn't do it as well as he did, just because he just had a way of explaining things that was just so perfect. And I remember I loaned that book to my dad, and all of a sudden one Sunday afternoon, he calls me. We're on our way back from Minnesota visiting my in-laws. He's like, yeah, that book you read, loaned me. Yeah. That's the best soldier memoir I've ever read. I'm like, yeah, it's pretty good. It's really good. But he'd read a lot of them. So then I didn't even realize how good it was until I heard other people talk about it. And there's not really much better than that book. So.
Well, I'll be reading it next week. I have yep. a total knee replacement, so oh. I'll be sitting around.
I'm working on
it. I will read it. Good I'm luck.
I'm working on a knee replacement. I sat in a car for 5 hours last weekend and wrecked my knee, apparently. I don't know why that happened, but it's slowly getting better, but yeah.
Okay. All right, so question number three was, I don't know if you're into superheroes or not, but if you are, who's your favorite superhero? If not, favorite historical figure?
If I'm going to just to answer the question, I'd say Spider-Man. But superhero movies, I think are dumb. I don't like superhero movies.
Okay.
It's like the same movie 47 times with I just don't. I'm just not into them. The only ones I ever was into is the Spider-Man ones. And I don't know why that's the one where I'm like, yeah, those are okay. I like those. But historical figure, I was this close to being a high school history teacher until I switched majors to broadcasting. Favorite historical figure is it'd be hard to narrow in on. It'd be so hard.
Okay.
Because like I'm more interested in like the everyman than like the really famous people. You know, I think that's why I like that E.B. Sledge book so good is because he was just a guy, you know. And so some of the I think another book that I really, really liked was the I can't think of what it's called. I have it here somewhere. But the book Don Malarkey wrote, his was. Like pretty much all of the Band of Brothers guys wrote kind of the same book, kind of, except it was their personal details. But his was more raw, more personal, more of his. He actually talked a lot about his personal pain a lot. That was a pretty good one. Like, I don't know, but that's sort of not the question. So let's just say Spider-Man.
Yeah, we'll go with that. That's good. I actually watched a lot of Spider-Man cartoons in the 70s, and I swear they had the best bad guys.
I vaguely remember those. I was born in 77, so I remember when we still lived on the farm, we moved when I was four, and I have vague memories of, oh, the Spider-Man cartoon's on or show or whatever. And I would run under the sink to grab the coloring mat thing that was Spider-Man to like pull it out and do that. And that's probably why I like Spider-Man. But I remember I have vague memories of what you're talking about, though.
I turned 11 in 77.
Well,
so I have very good memories of 1977. Very vivid memories. Okay. Number four is your favorite gun and caliber of all time, and they don't have to be married together. So it could be a 1911 and a 223.
My favorite gun is one that is much maligned, much panned, and I completely understand and agree why it is, but I still like it, and that is the M14/M1A. I just
love the M14.
I love that gun. I just do. My dad carried one in Vietnam. That's part of it, but I just like it. And I get it was dumb for what it was intended for at the time, like why it happened and how it happened. Another really good book, American Rifle. Have you ever read that? I can't
I think
not. Of
it. Write
the same
that
guy
down.
The same guy that wrote Washington Spies wrote that book. Oh, I can't think of his name.
Okay.
That is, it's like the biography of every service rifle, going back to George Washington's rifle. American Rifle, a biography. Alexander Rose wrote that. And
yep, seen it now.
It's a fantastic book. Back in about 2007 or 2008, he wrote it. Of course, I skipped to the chapter about the M14 right away, and the politics and the stupidity behind it. It shouldn't have happened. It really should not have. But I had no idea how much politics would go into the picking of a service rifle. You know, you'd think you would just leave that to the experts, people who know what they're talking about, but that didn't happen. And then,
nope.
And then when they start rolling out the M16, they're having these like foot wide diameter wounds in VC when they were testing it. They're like, this thing's amazing. What they didn't realize is the tooling was wore out and the bullet wasn't twisting fast enough. And so bullets were keyholing and hitting bad guys sideways. But they thought, oh my, this is the greatest firearm ever invented. But no, I like the M14 a lot. And I traded it off because I wasn't shooting it. I bought it to shoot service rifle matches. But I wasn't shooting those anymore. I was shooting USPSA a lot, and I was shooting limited. And my buddy got a hold of me and said, hey, I've got a CZ TacSport Orange in 40. Just landed today. I'm like, okay, I'll be down. And I didn't have the cash to buy it outright, so I traded that M1A, and I kick myself every day for it. Cartridge.
Go ahead.
If I was going to say cartridge... I don't really have a strong affinity for any one cartridge. I'm a big fan of 30 calibers. I've killed a lot of deer with 30 caliber guns, like 30-06 or 308. But lately, like my favorite cartridge right now, even though I shoot way more pistol than rifle, is the 6mm Creedmoor. I just think it's cool. It's a laser beam. I was shooting prairie dogs out in the middle of the state here last summer with it. And it was so much fun. It's just such an easy caliber to shoot. I get why a lot of guys use those 6mm calibers in PRS, and a fair amount use the 6 Creed too. But I don't know if it's a favorite. I don't really have a favorite cartridge. I like guns and shooting, and I don't know. It's easy to load for, and so I guess maybe that's why. I don't know. I should say 9mm because I've loaded thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of rounds of that, but yeah. You know.
Well, your 30 cal is your 9mm of the rifle.
Yeah, so pretty much.
That right there, that picture was taken when you turned 13, or the year you turned 13.
1990.
Yep, 1990 Marine Corps rifle team with an M14 1,000-yard line practice.
Nice.
Yeah. We have more in common than you know.
Oh, man. No, I really, the only thing I didn't like about doing the service rifle matches was that stupid jacket. I wasn't interested in wearing this straight jacket to make it easier to shoot. Like I got into the shooting sport to like get better at shooting, not use equipment to make shooting easier. And so so when I heard a USPSA match going on right behind the berm I was shooting into for the service rifle match, I'm like, what is going on? I thought they were doing an MP5 demo back there or something, or, you know, there's National Guard out there shooting fast or whatever. And I get back there and it's just these guys in shorts and t-shirts running around with, you know, Han Solo blasters using the Force to guide bullets and actually hit almost everything they're aiming at. I was like, wow, this is awesome. I want to do that. And yeah, I got away from the service rifle pretty fast, but I really did enjoy it though. While I was doing it, I learned a lot doing it for sure.
The other factor, the factor for me, the reason I switched, cause that's still my first love, but it's so much more expensive than practical shooting.
Oh yeah.
As a sport,
the ammo alone,
the ammo. And look, if you're going, I can drive most places and shoot a USPSA match and drive back and not be exhausted. But a lot of times those service rifle matches are 2 days. So you're driving down on a Friday. Like for me, it's 3 hours to the closest service match. Oh, other geez. Than the one here at Quantico, which they don't have that very often. I have to drive down to North Carolina. So I'm driving down Friday. I have a hotel room Friday night, Saturday night. I shoot Saturday, Sunday. I've got to load my ammo. I've got spotting scope, heavy jacket, rifle, all the ammo. It's just an expense. And it's an entire weekend for one match for what they would consider a local, you know?
Yeah. What was your load? What did you shoot out of your M14 or M1A, or what was the gun? Was it M1A?
It was, well, that was a double lug M14 for the Marine Corps rifle team.
Oh, sure.
I had an M1, and then I switched out from that. I started doing any rifle, any sight, and I used my Savage right here, BA-10 and 6.5 Creed.
Oh, okay.
And I was able to get that load down to a 32/100 of an MOA at 100 yards by loading.
I just don't have the... I load a lot of my own rifle ammo. I just don't have the patience for it. I'm very
it's
impatient.
A process.
But I also figured out after a while, because I learned reloading from my dad, and he was meticulous, just trickling in that last little grain by hand. He didn't trust a machine to do that. I'm doing that. And meanwhile, I'm like, yeah, I'm just going to use the RCBS dumper and get it in there. We're shooting at the same thing. We're shooting a deer or elk, whatever, antelope.
Mm.
And I'm like, all I got to do is hit this at 300 yards. It doesn't really matter if they're, you know, just that close together or if they're this close together. Like, I'm still going to kill the animal, you know? So I realized all that extra time wasn't as worth it. Now, if you're shooting longer ranges, like, I'm not a long range guy. I know nothing about it. Other than I'm not good at it or capable, but like, I get that it matters. And, you know, as a competitor, you're going to remove every single thing that could be a problem, to leave it to be just, you are the only thing that keeps you from winning. And I get that. But at the same time, I will find myself getting mildly, really, really, really compulsive about my pistol ammo sometimes. Like, this, why are my bullets not seated as deeply all of a sudden, you know? Or, you know, and it'll just be in my head. Like, I'll just imagine a problem that isn't even really there. But I never get that way with rifle ammo. It makes no sense. But
yeah, I was talking to someone recently, and, you know, I was saying it takes about, I would typically load somewhere between 100 and 120 rounds for a match. and it would be a minute per round. So it would take me at least 100 minutes just to load 100 rounds. And he said it took him 2 hours to do 100 rounds. I'm like, yeah, it's pretty close to the same thing. It takes a long
time. Is that with your, like, all your cases are already resized, or is that like start to finish?
Yeah, that's resized. That's literally just pouring the powder, seating the bullet.
Your case prep's done already.
Yeah. All that's done. Damn. It's literally pouring the powder, seating the bullet, measuring each one of them. Yeah.
Yeah, that's
just
going deep.
Those steps. Yeah. I would use a tweezer for each kernel if I had one at a time.
Yeah, I don't have the patience for that. Not even close.
It's hard. But I unfortunately, even with USPSA or practical shooting, whether it be IDPA, USPSA, whatever, I still have the problem of, no, I understand this is the aiming area, but I still need to hit right here.
Yeah.
So I still have that problem.
Yeah. I started out that way. I got over that quickly when the more I shot, it's like, hey, it's just got to be good enough, you know? And I got over that relatively quickly after, you know, and that's when I teach classes, people will think they need to shoot this when they're shooting their pistol, you know, and it's like, no, I mean, if you're hitting that, that's great. You know, slow fire. Sometimes some guy will, you know, he'll think he's hot stuff and he'll be shooting this little ragged hole about like this until he gets to about 10 yards. And then it starts to shape like this a little more. And then it's, you know, then he gets to 15 and it's like that. Even sometimes I'll have guys that'll be really, really tight all the way out. And I'm like, cool, go faster. Cause like that's cool, but you know, now do it more quickly. Like this is a concealed carry class. You know, this is shooting to, you know, how you're gonna do under pressure, not when you got all the time in the world to like make sure you draw a fine bead on that target and just you know, like you need to press the trigger now. Where's it gonna land? That's what I try to get people to understand that. You know, you're not going to take all day. That's the thing about when people get into USPSA or like I tell people about it, I'm like, it will ruin going to the range for you. It's going to completely ruin an indoor range because it takes something that was really fun and makes it kind of boring. And I still go to indoor ranges from time to time when I need to, but it's usually just because like I'm testing something on a gun or something, you know, it's not because I'm, you know, even in the winters are pretty brutal here, but I don't usually... outside of classes I'm teaching, I don't really go shoot a whole lot indoors, even in the winter. I just dry fire a whole bunch.
Where is here?
Sioux Falls, South Dakota.
Ooh, yeah. I imagine that gets chilly.
Well, it was 4 degrees this morning. On Monday, it was 72. So we're having a very strange winter out here. Tomorrow is going to be in the 50s, and then I'm shooting a rifle match down in Omaha about 3 hours south of here, and it's going to be in the mid 60s. So it's been a strange winter in this part of the country. Normally we had some super cold. We had a couple days that were 26 below zero, with a blizzard going on, but it was just the one time back in, I think it was December, but been a weird year.
Okay. Now you said, that you have been in the radio business.
Yeah.
So question number 5, I try to personalize. I was going to ask you for your favorite shooting memory, but now I'm going to ask you, what's your favorite experience or memory in the radio business?
This is such a weird story that will be hard to understand. I almost hesitate to try and tell this story because it's one of the, I'm afraid it's going to be one of those stories where you hear, you're gonna be like, I guess you had to be there, huh? And, yeah, that's going to be a dumpster fire of a story. Definitely. I suppose some of the things that just sort of, I mean, some things that happened, like when I was doing the morning show, one of my favorite memories though was, people would call in. Here's the wonderful thing about podcasting, Dave, that you don't know that you're missing out on. And that is the ability to people listening to you to call you and tell you how much you suck or how wonderful something was, or to just join in on the conversation you're having. And it's something you don't get with podcasting. And that was our bread and butter, was like the interaction with the audience, you know, during morning drive. And I was bitching about my neighbor in my backyard built a fence, like a wooden fence, like 6-7 foot fence all the way around, because he had dogs and whatever, and he wanted to build a fence. And I was, you know, exaggerating, talking about it, you know, just doing this like fake complaining storytelling thing on the air, right, just for entertainment purposes. And I was calling it a wall. He's building a wall around his yard. And my co-host was like, what's your big problem? I just don't like it. I want to be able to see my neighbors, you know, and then they build a wall, and now I can't get to know them or anything. And we get off the air, phone's ringing, answer it. We never took the phone calls live because we didn't have a producer or anything. It was just me and my co-host. Oh, okay. So I was, you know, the host, and I'm running the board and, you know, answering the phones and whatnot. And anytime you heard a phone call, it was recorded and played back. We never aired live phone calls. But this guy calls up, and as soon as I answer the phone, he's like, I can't stand you left-wing media people talking bad about Trump. And derp, 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 derp. He heard wall and conflated it with me talking about Donald Trump. And Trump was never part of the conversation at all. It was literally about my neighbor in the backyard. It was crazy. But another very memorable thing, sometimes people don't believe me when I tell them this. I didn't seek out the interview. It landed in my lap. I interviewed Hillary Clinton back in 2008 when she was running against Obama. And the only reason it happened was because it was the one time South Dakota's primary mattered. Our primary is late in the election run. It's in, I want to say it's like in June or July. It's like things are usually decided. You know, the candidates are pretty well decided by the time our primary happens. Well, Obama and Clinton were really close that year. And I was doing afternoons at the time. I was the program director most of the time I worked there. But I was doing afternoons at the time. And my boss comes down and goes, hey, I got a weird question for you. I'm like, yeah, what? Do you want to interview Hillary Clinton? Sure. Yeah. I mean, it would be dumb to say no to that. I mean, all politics aside, and at that time in my life, how old was I? 31. I didn't really, the politics of it was not a big thing. And actually I wasn't even I was technically a gun owner, but I wasn't really super into it. You know, it wasn't a thing I was super into at the time. And so, yeah, I interviewed Hillary Clinton. I don't really remember any of it. I remember making a joke about Wolf Blitzer and I made her laugh. That's about it. But yeah, those are probably two of the most memorable things, I guess.
Okay.
And
I mean, that's a unique opportunity.
Yeah, I got to, and I mean, she was the most famous person I ever interviewed. I got the chance to talk to a lot of famous people. We got to interview and meet Bob Saget a couple of years before he died. He was performing at a casino near here, and what a amazing guy to get to meet and hang out. Like, he literally hung out with us after the show. Like, it wasn't just meet and greet, like, hey, how did we take a picture and bye? Like, he actually stood there and chatted with us for 10 minutes. You know, like, usually meet and greets are like, hey, how are you? Nice to meet you. Picture, right. Gone. You know,
shake your hand, take a picture.
Yeah, next. Which is fine. Yeah. I mean, it's cool. Yeah. But he just sat and chatted us up for 10 minutes. It was amazing. I got Kelly Clarkson hugged me. That was cool. She hugged everybody though. she played here in Sioux Falls and we did the meet and greet or whatever. And the guy running the meet and greet goes, okay, now I'm just warning everybody. Kelly's a hugger. She's going to hug you. Just deal with it if you don't like it. And I'm like, hell yeah, I'll take a hug from Kelly Clarkson. Hell yeah.
Is she as short as she looks?
Yeah, but she's not crazy short.
Okay.
She's short, but I mean, she wasn't like 5'1", you know.
Okay. I mean, yeah, she looks like she's like 5'2", 5'3". Maybe I'm wrong.
I don't remember her being that short. If I had to guess, I would say like 5'4". You know,
okay.
It's a good thing I have a Google machine in
pretty
front of me.
Pretty close to average height for a woman.
Yeah, she wasn't. She's 5'3", I guess.
Okay,
I
mean, yeah.
But not short. Crazy short. Trying to think. Another interview I got to do, one of my favorite interviews I did was, I got to interview him twice, was Michael Kudlitz. If you don't know who he is, you know him. He's not like super famous.
I know the name.
Yeah. He was Bull Randleman in Band of Brothers. And
okay.
He was, he played Abraham Ford in The Walking Dead. And he was also on a show that was amazing that got canceled because of, well, it got moved to TNT because of Jay Leno, was Southland. It was a cop show. Mm-hmm. That was really, really good. That was the show I got to interview him about. He was really cool guy to talk to. Like, he had, you know, that's the cool thing about interviews, like, is you can actually try and find things out about people that are unique, that are a little more relatable. And I just remember just out of nowhere, I just said, so if you weren't acting, what would you do? He's like, oh, dude, I'd totally be in construction. I love building stuff. I was before I got a bunch of good acting gigs, he was a union carpenter for movie sets and stuff. And it was just really cool to hear him talk about, like, yeah, that's and he was just like completely proud of it. Like, if the acting thing didn't work out, yeah, I'd be building houses or something. You know, it was pretty cool.
Okay. Yeah, that's pretty cool. That's what I like about doing this podcast, is actually getting to know people who shoot, not mm-hmm. just talking about shooting, but their individual experiences like this.
Mm-hmm.
This is awesome.
And like, as you talk, like, then you start peeling back layers of that onion, you know, like whenever yeah. I would do an interview with somebody, I always had prepped questions. And I would try to think of unique things, not just, hey, when's the next album coming out? Ugh. You know, it would be like something. I would try to be unique. I would try to be memorable. And I remember, here's an Louis Anderson comedian. I interviewed him one time, and when I was doing Morning Solo for a while. And when we got done, he was so nice. He was like, you know, you ask way better questions than most guys in this market the size of Sioux Falls. I'm like, thank you. that was very nice. But yeah, no, it's fun to like peel back layers as you talk to people.
Did you ever have any desire to go the route of Howard Stern, like try to go into a bigger area, maybe even like Sirius or XM, something like that?
Sirius and XM are the devil when you work in local radio, because they're competing media, you know?
Yes, they
and
are.
Then and as soon as I got out of radio, it wasn't right
got a subscription.
It was about a year later. We bought a vehicle that had a free year.
Yeah,
and I'm not gonna lie. It's the thing I didn't know about Sirius and XM is it's so much better than Spotify or any of the music services. Like, that's an algorithm. Just like, oh, he likes Metallica, so we'll go get a song that's sort of kind of like Metallica, and it'll be like, you know, the Baby Killers from Hell or something, you know, something I don't even know. And I'm like, yeah, that's not, no. And Sirius and XM are programmed, you know, I mean, it's with a computer, but it, like, people are setting up the programming. That's the thing,
right?
That a lot of people bitch about music radio, but what they don't realize is if we didn't play that song all the time, someone else would, and you'd be listening to them instead, whether you know it or not. And if it's an older music format, like a classic rock or something, yeah, you're not getting that same repetition. You know, it would get really annoying if you were playing Sweet Emotion 17 times a day. Like, I was on a top 40 radio station. So yeah, we were beating the hell out of Taylor Swift or Rihanna or whoever. And it was about every 2 hours and 20 minutes, we would turn the hottest rotation over. And yeah, it was repetitive, but it was like the top 40 songs of the day. So that's
right.
That's how it works. And that's what I really liked about when I started listening to music on Sirius was, oh, this is programmed. Like, I'm getting hits. I'm not getting random garbage that doesn't, you know, it's not just alternative hits of the 90s on Spotify. Like, you don't know what you're getting. And sometimes it's good and sometimes it's awful, you know?
The one thing I like about Spotify is, though, I'm a hooligan. So I'm a huge fan of The Who. So I can create my own Who playlist. Like, I have a playlist. The Who has so many songs. I have a Who song. We'll say a Van Halen song, a Who song, name another rock band, you know, AC/DC, a Who song, then another rock band, then another Who song. And it goes for hours. I could drive for probably 6 hours and not hear the same song twice. But serious though, I can put on the NFL or 80s channel and
like anything you're into, you can listen to a whole bunch of.
Exactly.
But like, as soon as, like, I'm of a very, very, I mean, and you are too. I mean, you're 11 years older than me, Dave, but you're not that much older. You know, you and I are old enough to remember a time where there weren't cell phones, where you didn't carry all your music around in a little digital box. It was in a big book of CDs or cassettes.
Yep.
And they were in the car with you. Yeah, the K-Singles. They were amazing. Some of those B-sides of the K-Singles I still have. They're great. When things started going to computer and digital, I remember being in college and the guy across the hall had a CD burner and I was like, this is amazing. It, you know, Napster was the big thing at the time too.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm getting all of this for free and I'm burning it onto a CD. And then when I'm driving clear across the state back home, I've got whatever I want, my custom playlist. But something I was also doing at the time, I don't really have any of the music that I downloaded from Napster anymore, but I was ripping my CDs, you know, as like when I got my first MP3 player, that was like the impetus to start ripping my library into digital form. So I don't have every CD that I own ripped, but I have a lot of them. So I don't need Spotify because I already have it. Like, I have my library, you know, on my phone and listen to it that way. And, but I was just the dork who did it. I was doing it before Spotify or smartphones were a thing. You know, I was doing it to just have it in a portable version, not knowing that someday I'd be able to just carry it around here. And, you know, so it worked out, you know, I didn't have any foresight. Right. I had no idea what was going to happen, but it was convenient when it did.
Yeah. I mean, when I, in the 70s, when I was on the swim team or doing whatever, and my mom's cleaning the house, and they had the 8-track playing music. And then we went to cassettes and then we went to CDs and now everything's digital. Who the hell knows what's next?
Yeah. The funny thing is it's not next, but it never went away, was vinyl. She's 15. A couple of years ago, she wanted a turntable for Christmas. She just
liked
the idea of it. And so the only albums she ever had were Taylor Swift, but now even she's getting sick of Taylor Swift. So
God bless her.
and she's turning into a rocker, man. She discovered Paramore I'm like, oh, there's the gateway. Like, Paramore is a good band. Like, now, and it's the album, I can't think of the name of the album, but it's a good one. It's got some good rocking tunes on it. And it's the first vinyl she bought that wasn't Taylor Swift. I was like, I'm so proud of you. You'll have Pink Floyd Dark Side of the Moon before you know it.
She's maturing. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Oh, that's awesome. All right. So you said at 31, when you interviewed Hillary, you were a gun owner, but you weren't into it as much as you are now. So
I was technically a gun owner because I got a 870 shotgun when I was 11 and it was at my parents' house. That's about as much of a gun owner as I was when I was 31.
So you didn't grow up around guns?
Oh yeah, I did. Oh yeah.
Okay.
No, my dad was a hardcore big game hunter. South Dakota is the pheasant hunting capital of the world. There are, what is it, 4 million pheasants are shot in South Dakota every year, something like that.
Whoa.
Huge part of the tourist industry in South Dakota is pheasant hunting. Like, when October rolls around and it's the opener, the airport is full of blaze orange and flannel and shotguns. There's more guns at the Sioux Falls airport in October than pretty much any airport anywhere that weekend. It's
so that's
it's
not the week. That's not the month for Red Dawn to happen is what you're saying.
No, it could happen here, but the, it would be a, well, it's all birdshot. I don't think it'd be all that effective, honestly, but,
it's close range. CQB.
But yeah, but, but no, my dad was, big time trap shooter, was really into trap shooting. I think he ended up, is it double A, whatever the classes are in ATA? I can't remember what he ended up being, but he got really into it and was, and kind of when I started playing sports, then he kind of started falling out of it because then it was like, okay, am I doing this or are we going to his stuff? And, you know, and those are sacrifices I haven't had to make really, cause they haven't conflicted with my daughter's sport of gymnastics. It's in the winter when I'm not shooting. So it's perfect. But no, I grew up, you know, first off shooting squirrels and rabbits and then, with 22s and then bird hunting, pheasant hunting. Like if you don't grow up pheasant hunting in Eastern South Dakota, you were just in a family that didn't have guns or hunt or whatever. And dad was also a big game hunter, deer and elk primarily. And, so yeah, I definitely grew up around it. Got, you know, shot my first deer at 12 and, yeah, certainly not handguns though. I do recall dad having a Smith and Wesson revolver of some kind. And I was 10 years old and I shot it and it about flew out of my hand. And I'm like, wow, handguns suck. I don't ever want to do that again, you know? and it wasn't until I was, it was like 2011, Thanksgiving of 2011 was a really nice day in my hometown. Went down for Thanksgiving and my dad was going to take the grandkids out to go shoot 22s out at the gun club, which was, you know, a 5-minute drive from their house. And I went with, just was like, oh yeah, that'll be fun. And went with, and he had the 22s, but he also had his Glock 17 with, and I shot it and I was immediately hooked. Like, this is so fun. I'd still been playing. I've always been competitive. I've always been involved in a sport my entire life of some kind. And the only one I was really involved in anymore was softball, slow pitch softball in the summer. And, but like, I was a nerd, you know, like I would actually like practice, like I'd go to the batting cage and work on that and get together with a buddy and, you know, shag flies or ground balls or whatever. And so I was kind of over it just cause it was hard to deal with other people and not hard to deal with other people, but just, I ended up being like the manager and I didn't want to be the manager. I just wanted to show up and play and I didn't want to be in charge of it. And it just got to be this giant hassle. Team sports are great when you're young, but when you're an adult and you expect others to also be adults, it's really frustrating. And I was ready for an individual sport and I played golf quite a bit too. I was never that nerdy with golf, but it was something I kind of did. And, but then when I, you know, shot dad's pistol, I was like, oh wow, this is awesome. And I ended up buying that pistol from him for $100. It was a Gen 4 Glock back in 2011. You know, they hadn't been out very long. And he allowed me to have it because he knew, one, my wife wouldn't let me spend the money, you know, the $550 or whatever it was for a Glock at the time. And she was scared to death of him. She didn't grow up around him. She grew up on a farm, but they just had one old rusty shotgun in the closet when a coyote wouldn't go away. And, you know, it was last shot 20 years ago, you know. So she didn't grow up around it. So it was sort of like a way of getting me eased back in. And I was just off and running from there.
So how old were you when you found practical shooting?
I would have been 38. Well, when I first found it, I was probably 37. I was 38 when I started participating. Three Gun Nation was on Sportsman Channel back in the day. And that, I remember first seeing that in 2014. And I was like, wow, that's really cool. I had an AR that I got a couple years before that, But I had also that same year had bought, that was the year I bought my, I still have my first target for my M1A. Oh. I bought in, what was it, October? Yeah, it was October of 2014. And I, it was, you know, it was something I was interested in, but like, I didn't know anything. I didn't know anything about shooting. I, at that point, I'd been reloading ammo for a year. I really knew nothing. And so I had been watching that and then was Googling around and found on YouTube that, oh, there's a club near Sioux Falls that has, that does three gun. And I want to do that. And so I got my 870 pump gun and my AR. And I read an article I think by Jesse Tischhauser on opticsplanet.com about, hey, get a 1-4 variable scope. Make sure it's got at least 100 feet of field of view at one power and you're good to go. And I was like, okay. So I got a scope that was like that, saved up, spent the $300 on that old Burris scope. And then went and shot the match and was terrible. It was absolutely awful, but I had a lot of fun. It was great. And I was shooting with one of the guys that I was shooting with when I was a total noob is now one of my best friends. And he actually ended up on Three Gun Nation. And I think the last or second to last year they were on TV. He ended up on there, but I was totally hooked. And then I shot that first year. I only shot the three gun matches and I shot the classifier only match for USPSA, but I didn't realize, if you hit the white targets, that's bad. So I was just flinging bullets like it was three gun. I just thought it was two to neutralize. I didn't know there was scoring. So I was just like, bah, 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 bah. I was just throwing bullets at, and it was a pretty tough classifier, this one stage. And I got a zero on it. I'm like, zero? I got hits. Yeah, but for every one of those five, you got minus 10 here. And I was like, oh, okay, that's different. All right, well, I guess you live and you learn. And so I found out real fast that pistol was not something I was good at, as most people who start with three gun as their first shooting sport. So I started shooting more USPSA, and then that's when it was only one gun, and just the more challenging aspects of shooting a pistol really started to appeal to me, even though I still considered myself a rifle shooter for a while after that. It became like all of a sudden I realized you have way more pistols than you do rifles, you know, and you're way better with the pistol now than you really are with the rifle, you know, to just like pick it up and go. I mean, it translates in that direction, but I was like, wow, I guess I'm a pistol guy now, I guess. So, yeah. And so that's when it got going. It was 2015.
Okay. And were you using that Glock when you first started?
Yeah. Shooting that Glock 17. That was the pistol I was using. I was shooting limited. The first USPSA match I ever shot, though, I was in production. But no one told me you had to cap the mags at 10 rounds. So I should have been bumped to open because I was shooting with full mags in production, but I only had three mags. It just made, well, this is a production gun, I guess. So, and then when I found out that wasn't the case, then I started shooting limited. And that was literally why I was a limited shooter, was because I started with a 9mm Glock. And well, I get more points if I shoot 40 and I shoot major. So then I got a Glock 35 off a gun broker and shot limited for a year with that, and then upgraded to the TAC Sport. And then COVID hit, and I was actually sitting in this chair doing my morning show from here, from home, and I kept messing with this Gen 4 MOS Glock that I bought the year before. And I just was messing around. I ordered a red dot for it, just messing around, and then it became really obvious that this is something I wanted. I'm going this direction now. And so I shot carry optics like the last year before everybody shot it. So I got one year where it was still kind of not everybody and their dog is shooting carry optics. I got to shoot it like that for one year. And then by 2021, everybody and their dog was all over it.
And it's still growing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fun.
Yeah. Yeah, it is for sure. So are you still doing radio stuff now?
No. I got out of radio in 2022. I still like radio. That's why I started podcasting, was because I still liked doing it. I have another podcast besides not another shooting show called Andy's Things and Stuff. And it was just basically me sitting down and talking with somebody, you know, but it wasn't anybody famous or anybody super notable for the most part. It was just somebody I knew who I found interesting. And then we would just talk, and I didn't even really know what my show was about until Robert Wyatt from the Paracast, he listened to it and was like, you just like get into what people's passions are and then talk about them. I'm like, oh yeah, I guess you're right. I didn't even realize that's what it was, but we would just like over the course of a couple hours, like talk about what they were really into. And so no, I got out of radio in 2022 because the business side of it sucked. Corporate radio is awful. There's a couple of small companies that are good, but most of the big companies are absolutely awful. They don't care about radio. They don't care about the art form itself. They're playing
the bottom line.
It's just strictly, it's Wall Street. They're playing Wall Street. Right. Yeah. It's just a business. It could be, you know, selling coffee. But the thing is, radio, I think, could still be really viable. The fact that podcasts are huge are just evidence that radio is still a viable medium. But the companies who own the radio stations have no idea what they're doing with them. They just don't know what to do with it. And there's a few mom and pop companies out there, smaller companies that do get it. And they're very far and few between. Some of the best radio I've listened to is like super small town radio. And yeah, I mean, their jocks aren't getting rich or anything, but they're good. You know, like it's good local content that I just enjoy hearing when I'm in another town. But so I quit doing that. Basically what it came down to was, I had the number one morning show in town, and they wanted to move me and my co-host off of mornings to put a syndicated show on.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Because the syndicated show is cheap, and then they've got a live body for the midday and the afternoon. And I'm like, this is a terrible idea. And they didn't like, you know, when I wasn't on board with what they wanted to do, then all of a sudden after 18 years, I was a bad employee. And I was like, okay, well, went home, had a talk with my wife, and I'm like, I can't do this. I can't work there anymore. I told her what happened, and she's like, yeah, no, you shouldn't. And used up the last vacation I had scheduled, and then worked that very last Friday, made sure I had all the music done for the weekend and the following Monday. And then I went up to my boss's office and handed my letter of resignation. And that was my exit from radio. I had been, along with that, starting in 2016, I started teaching the South Dakota permit class. You can, like in South Dakota, you can just walk into the sheriff's office and apply for a basic permit. And it's good in most states, but we border Minnesota. Sioux Falls, I think, is 10 miles from the Minnesota border. And a lot of people go there, and we don't have reciprocity in the People's Republic of Minnesota with the regular permit. The enhanced permit does. So that's why a lot of people get that. And being somebody who was almost a teacher and worked in broadcasting, I took a concealed carry class, and it was terrible. it was not good. And I was like, I can stand up there and do a better job, even though I don't know the material as well. I can learn that.
Right.
But the other half, you ain't got, dude. And I started doing math, and I'm like, wow. And this was a cheap one. It was only like $40, and it was not worth even that. But I did the math, and there's like 30 people on there. I'm like, well, hell, that's a pretty cool part-time job. So that was how I ended up getting into teaching, was doing that. So I got my old NRA cert, you know, because you get that NRA basic pistol instructor, you know, you know what you're doing then. No, you right. don't really. But so I'd been teaching for, at that point, 6 years, and it was a, you know, as far as part-time jobs go, it was very lucrative as a part-time job. It was paying for all my USPSA stuff, I went to Nationals in 2021, the year before I quit radio. And it was paying for all my bullets and all my toys, and it was paying for projects around the house too. You know, it was going well. And so the deal I made with my wife was, I'm just going to do this more. And then if I need to be doing something else, I'll do that too. But she had a good job. We were okay financially. Luckily I had this thing to kind of fall back on and make happen. And yeah, so I've been doing that since, 2022 was when I got done with radio. So I've been, just doing more of the teaching, and I'm still learning about trying to make that more of a full-time business. You know, turns out weekday classes are gold. People don't want to give up their weekends. So I've started doing classes more during the week, and
nice.
I get more people in those classes than the weekend class. I mean, sometimes a weekend class works out for people and that one will be full, but I can count on a weekday class being fuller than a weekend class, which sounds crazy.
But it does.
Yeah. But people don't want to give up their weekends. So
that's awesome though, that you can, you can do that during the week, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. No, wow. I mean, my summer this year is, you know, I'm going to do most of the stuff I can do on the regular that makes me more money during the week, and then keep my weekends open for, you know, not matches, family stuff. And then more of the, you know, sort of one-off classes I'm planning on doing. Like I'm going to do a full one day, like 8-hour concealed carry class, you know, just shooting, not the permit, not the law, not all that stuff, just shooting class. So start doing that. The thing that's hard with those classes though is, you know, when, cause like, I don't teach competitive shooters really. Like I've helped out guys that are getting into it around here, but it's mostly the regular people, your average, mostly average newbies, joke. Honestly. Yeah. It's just average people that have a gun and want to learn how to use it. And the thing that's hard with a lot of those, especially the ones that are men, is, well, I know how to make the gun go off. What do I need a class for? You know, like to try and get someone to realize that, oh, wow, I really could get a lot out of a class. You know, it's not until they take a permit class, because I'm the gatekeeper between them and their permit that allows them to carry in Minnesota. Then they take that class and, you know, we do a little bit of shooting training in that. And then after that, then they're like, okay, now I get that there's some value. And there's some guys that still have ego and they literally don't listen to a thing I say. It's kind of funny when that happens. I had two guys that were a father and son. God, this is so funny. When they called up to ask about the class, they literally told me, we don't really grip pistols the way people do these days. We kind of do the Weaver thing. Like they preemptively told me on the phone, I don't have an open mind, that which was fine, because I just left him alone. Like, you do you, buddy. Like, that's fine. It was hilarious. But yeah, so no radio anymore. Doing teaching. I also got into some commercial driving. I drive a school bus and I love it. It's crazy. Whoa. I never thought I would have, but
that is crazy. That's crazy talk.
A year ago in the winter though, not a lot going on. You know, I'm sitting around the house doing nothing. My wife's like, you need something to do. Okay. Well, so I started driving school bus and it pays pretty damn good for the 4 hours I'm doing it a day. And I got paid to get a CDL, which now is costing money to get. It's not like you just go take a test, go drive and it's over. Like they're requiring training now and to even get them. So I got paid to get trained for that. I upgraded that. I'm doing a winter seasonal commercial driving gig with the state DOT, snow plowing, which has been a kind of disappointing because it's barely snowed here this year. So last year we had snow on the ground from December till April. And this year it's barely snowed. And let me tell you, driving a snow plow is really fun. It's a blast. It's so fun driving those giant trucks and throwing salt and brine and whatnot all over the place. I'm so much happier now than when I was doing radio, just because of the way the business was.
Well, that's awesome.
Until next time.
Don't be a little bitch.
Yeah.